Like many who suffer from what's known as empty nose syndrome, for Erica Schneider, it all began with a fairly common nasal complaint.
Basically, I had been told a couple of times that I had a deviated septum, and that might be like contributing to some of my allergies and breathing problems, as well as snoring. That was always a problem that I had with roommates.
And so to deal with the deviated septum, Erica elected to have surgery.
A really easy surgery, just like outpatient surgery in one day. I wasn't going to have to stay overnight, and I just didn't think it was going to be that big of a deal. And I was not told of any complications.
And initially, at least, everything seemed to go okay.
So at first, I didn't really feel like any problem other than like really bad swelling. But then as a couple of weeks went on, my nose felt very dry all the time. But at the same time, it also felt very congested. I mean, it makes you feel like you can't breathe, and I guess that's suffocating, you know. You feel it pretty much all the time, and that makes you start to panic. Your brain just goes to like, oh my God, I can't breathe. I need to treat this. The worst part about it was I could not sleep through the night anymore, and this was immediately. At first, I thought that was normal because, you know, I had like gauze stuck up my nose. But then after that, I just felt like I had a cold every single day. And you know how like when you're trying to sleep when you have a cold, you wake up and you have to blow your nose. I started being unable to sleep through the night immediately.
A patient will tend to present when they have empty nose syndrome, complaining that they are not breathing correctly through their nose. They typically have had some type of surgery done on their nose, and yet they actually feel worse.
Dr. Stephen Hauser is an otolaryngologist or an ear, nose and throat specialist from Cleveland, Ohio in the United States, and he's at the forefront of trying to figure out exactly what's going on with empty nose syndrome.
What patients will oftentimes describe to me is that they're actually suffocating. The hallmark of this is that when we look in someone's nose, they actually tend to be really wide open. It's a paradox that they are wide open and yet they feel so blocked.
Even if you go to the doctor and they tell you nothing's wrong with you, I mean, you know something's wrong with you. There were people telling me I was crazy, but like, who would make this up for fun?
They just know it does not feel right in terms of their breathing, despite having had surgery to try to help their breathing.
I was trying to find some common ground with the patient experience, so I asked Hauser how the feeling of empty nose syndrome might compare with the really bad hay fever attack where you're all blocked up and you feel kind of shut off from the world.
It tends to be something like that all the time, yes. And the big difference between what you're experiencing there and what these patients are experiencing are the fact that they actually have no blockage when you look in their nose. And yet, if someone were to look in your nose when you're experiencing a bad hay fever episode, your nose will look very blocked. You will have very weepy turbinates, very swollen tissue, and you'd have a difficult time really seeing all the way through the nose. And this is part of the problem that these patients run into as well, is that they will have seen multiple doctors who look in their nose and say, well, what are you talking about? You can't breathe through your nose. I could drive a truck through your nose. Your nose is wide open. What's going on here? This makes no sense. And this is where they end up then, a lot of them potentially getting depressed and feeling like the medical establishment cannot help them at all.
We're right at the start of trying to figure out what's going on with empty nose syndrome, but it was 2 decades ago that Hauser first encountered a patient with this paradoxical blockage.
I believe I was a third, possibly a fourth year resident, and I remember clearly the patient that I had seen. She was in complaining that her nose was blocked. And the strange fact she told me is she actually felt like she was breathing better when she had a cold. So I looked in her nose then with a, you know, typical head mirror and shining the light in, and I could see all the way through her nose to the very back. I could see her soft palate in the back of her nose fluttering up and down when she would talk. And I found that quite peculiar, why she would be feeling like she was so blocked, yet she was so open. And so I brought this to the attention of my attending, who promptly said, well, I'll take care of it. And he went in to do so. And frankly never explained it to me what he thought was going on, possibly because he didn't know what was going on. I'm not sure. I started looking into it myself, and I eventually came in contact with a senior statesman in the realm of otolaryngology by the name of Murray Grossan, the first physician to explain to me what's going on in terms of empty nose syndrome. And then I discovered a paper by Eugene Kern that had been out for some time about empty nose syndrome. He's in fact the person that had coined that term. And then there really was very little in the literature about that. I guess when I became an attending, I decided to look into it further myself because it remained a puzzle in my head.
One thing we do know about empty nose syndrome is that it usually follows nasal surgery. But before we can go into detail there, we need to do a quick refresher on the anatomy of the nose.
The nose is an organ that has the septum in the middle. And then on either side, pairs of turbinates. So on the right side, they'll have an inferior turbinate, and the left side, an inferior turbinate. Same thing, they have middle turbinates and superior turbinates. The inferior turbinate is a large turbinate in the nose that is probably about the size of a person's index finger on each side. And basically, it has a lot of vascular tissue within that can swell and shrink, and it can help block the airway as a result. This is why patients at times are going to feel blocked up, and this is why the inferior turbinate ends up potentially being something that we need to think about to reduce its size to allow someone to breathe better.
And there's some pretty compelling evidence that damage to these index finger-sized turbinate structures is at least somewhat responsible for empty nose syndrome.
Our best estimate for patients that undergo a total inferior turbinate resection, meaning scissors are placed in the nose and the scissors are brought to bear on the turbinate and the entire thing essentially is removed, there's probably about 20% of them that can develop empty nose syndrome.
And the lesser the turbinate structure that's cut out, the lower the chance of developing empty nose syndrome. So case closed, right? Damage to these turbinate structures is responsible for the onset of the paradox.
It seems that it's not just that they're missing the tissue, because I actually encountered several patients who actually had what looked like sort of parallel resections, meaning that their inferior turbinate was missing or mostly missing on both sides, and yet they would tell me, well, no, I'm breathing fine on my right side. My right side's perfect. It's my left side that feels so hollow or empty or blocked. And so that was very curious to me. And then I also encountered patients who, frankly, were not missing much tissue. They had had surgery to their turbinates. You could tell it looked lumpy, bumpy, but for the most part, it looked like their inferior turbinate was completely still there. So these patients, though, are describing these same symptoms, so that was confusing to me as well. So that couldn't rectify with a model of patients having difficulty just based on their structure, that they're missing tissue. And so that's where the issue of function comes in. Function meaning that the nerves that are responsible for sensing the airflow are damaged in the process of removing this tissue, and they typically actually will recover and will grow back, but in those select cases, there are patients that never have recovery of function, and they then develop these symptoms of empty nose syndrome.
And these nerves? Well, they live in a part of the nose called the mucosa.
The mucosa is the lining inside the nose, and this mucosa is very important to moisten and humidify the air so that it's actually 100% humidity before it hits the lungs. The nerves that sense airflow appear to reside inside the mucosa, and therefore when that mucosa is damaged, when it's either cut out and completely removed from the nose, or when it is damaged somewhere along the surface, such as with a laser or cautery running that along the surface of the tissue, that is where the nerves that supply sensation information to the brain can be damaged and potentially may not heal back correctly. And techniques that reduce the turbinate that stay essentially away from the lining have a much lesser chance of causing any type of empty nose syndrome, and theoretically should be safe and not be able to cause empty nose syndrome.
But let's check back in with Erica. Following a surgery, the feeling of suffocation it just wouldn't go away.
You know, the first year I thought, okay, he's still healing, and then maybe now I needed to repeat this. But then after like a year and a half, I was just like, there is really something wrong, and nobody here knows what it is. I had dropped out of graduate school. I couldn't sleep through the night. I was having daily nosebleeds, and I didn't know what was going on, but I just wanted to get to the bottom of it.
In the process of getting to the bottom of it, Erica had another two turbinate surgeries.
You know, by the time I had this third thing done, I realized, okay, surgery is the problem. And I started looking online and I found Dr. Hauser's group. And, you know, I just thought, okay, this is what I have. There is no doubt that I have this condition.
It's hard to imagine the sense of relief you must feel bouncing from doctor to doctor to doctor to finally find someone who offers some sort of hope. So what is it exactly that Hauser does when he encounters a patient with empty nose syndrome?
When patients contact me about empty nose, what I talk to them about is, well, moisture is going to be very important, typically utilizing saline sprays, saline jellies, and nasal oils. And frankly, patients need to experiment and see what kind of feels best inside their nose. Everyone's a little bit different, so I don't have an exact recipe as to what will get people feeling the best. But they need to experiment with some of those to see what gets them feeling as good as they can be. And then sometimes patients need to actually try to rearrange the airflow inside their nose. They can use things like cotton. Now, one thing that helped me to sort of figure out what was going on with empty nose in the past was when I realized that we could do what I've termed the cotton test. So a cotton test is where we literally are taking cotton, usually about half a ball or so, and moistening that with saline and placing that into the nose, and usually in the area where the patient is missing tissue, and then seeing how that affects them in terms of their breathing.
Yeah, he like put this like wet piece of cotton in there and it blocked off, I guess, a lot of my nose, but it felt more natural. You know, having like a foreign piece of material in my nose like felt more natural. So I was like, cool. It kind of confirmed that this is what I have.
The interesting thing as an ear, nose, throat physician, if you put this in someone and you see how they're breathing, they may very quickly tell you that, oh my gosh, that is so incredible. Please don't take that out. I haven't breathed that well for ages. And so when you encounter a patient like that, you then very much start to realize, wow, this empty nose stuff is real.
That's really the only like standard diagnostic that exists right now, other than, you know, the self-reported subjective symptoms that patients will explain. So yeah, the cotton test worked. And after that, I was like sold and I trusted him.
The principle behind the cotton test, fill the empty nose, is also the thinking behind one way to treat the syndrome, turbinate transplant, where instead of cotton, the empty nose is filled with
an implant made of this cadaver tissue, which is called alloderm. They've taken tissue from a dead body and cleaned it, and it can be grafted into your nose to exist as a placeholder to give the air the resistance that it needs to go through your airway. Because without it, you know, it's like a plane trying to lift off without this resistance. The air just sits there and is turbulent and won't flow through your airway. And that's what leads to that suffocation feeling. But it doesn't replace the function of your turbinates. You still have a lot of the same symptoms. It's just a bit less of a degree.
By building up the tissue, what we're essentially doing is we're creating a speed bump. So the air that comes in will hit that cotton or hit the implant, and the air will be bounced away from that cotton, and it will now strike an area that still has intact sensation, such as the middle turbinate. Because more often than not, it's the inferior turbinate that's involved with empty nose syndrome. And so if we can build up the area or use cotton and we kind of redirect the air so that it can't whip through an opening at the floor of the nose, but now can actually go into the nose and kind of scoot superior towards the middle turbinate, which still has intact nerves because there's been no surgery to it, now the patient can feel like, wow, I'm breathing. I'm feeling air go through my nose. And that is much preferable to feeling like you're suffocating.
And while no placeholder, not cotton, not cadaver, can reverse the nerve damage, if Erica's experience is anything to go by, these treatments can be a massive success after a long sequence of failure.
Oh my gosh, it was life-changing for me. I mean, I was able to start sleeping. I started to feel like I wasn't suffocating all day and dry and miserable. All kinds of normal things you take for granted came back, you know. My brain wasn't distracted by this feeling 24/7. It just changed my life for the better. You know, physically, the relief was amazing, but I think for me emotionally, it did even more because I was able to be like a functional person again and like do things.
But the implant wasn't a permanent solution.
I had more complications arise. Unfortunately, the implants tend to reabsorb, and so you have to repeat it. And then the second try doesn't always hold. And unfortunately, that's been the case for me. I feel like empty nose syndrome is a progressive condition. And you can treat it, but since there is no cure, it tends to lead to all these other complications and secondary conditions.
So if empty nose syndrome is poorly diagnosed, and even when it is diagnosed, difficult to treat, why don't we just cut to the primary cause and end turbinate surgery itself?
Well, I think that the reality is that we have safer methods to reduce the turbinates now than we had in the past. And I think the argument could be made that it would be wise for us to reduce turbinates judiciously with these techniques rather than with using scissors to cut out tissue. Yes, I'm not in favor. I'll admit it. I'm not in favor of using turbinate scissors to cut out an inferior turbinate. But there are ways to reduce a turbinate in a submucosal fashion, and that could be done through radiofrequency devices, can be done through a microdebrider below the lining to actually directly remove blood vessels. And these devices should provide minimal damage to the mucosa overlying where the nerves are situated, and this tends to not create empty nose syndrome.
But empty nose syndrome is more than just the physiological symptoms. There's a psychological and an emotional burden as well. Erica had endured her paradoxical obstruction, her suffocation, for 13 years before she started being treated by Hauser.
People will describe to me that they are just constantly thinking of their nose. They really can't get any work done. They end up losing jobs and losing relationships, getting divorced because they really can't think of anything other than the fact that they can't breathe. And that's occurring 24/7. Their sleep is often affected. They have poor sense of smell. When patients come to see me with empty nose syndrome, there is oftentimes a very high level of anxiety.
I think I was more embarrassed. You know, I tried to hide it the best that I could, and I kind of went into like fight or flight mode rather than depression. I'm more of like an anxiety person, so this amped my anxiety up a million times.
Some of these patients then, when I managed to implant them and see them back 6 months later or something like this, it's a world of difference. These patients are so much more at peace and calm, and it's clear that their nose was really ruling their lives in the past. And the fact that we've implanted them and have them feeling better, they are much calmer individuals. In fact, I have to tell you, I've had 15 to 20 patients who have told me that my surgery kept them from committing suicide. Now, I do a lot of sinus surgery, like I mentioned, and sleep apnea and so forth. And those are surgeries that help people's quality of life. They really don't save people's lives. But a lot of times the empty nose surgery that I do can actually save someone's life.
Dr. Stephen Hauser, and you also heard from Erica Schneider.